Just go on the tour and verbally abuse the
Oh, yeah,
tour
argue with
guides
them.
For telling lies. But don't tell them we sent you.
Exactly.
We'd end up like Kenny, who's banned from Zach Bagans Museum. We'll get banned from the Winchester.
Yeah, I want to at least be inside of the house before we get banned from it. I'm Paige.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Spooky Science Sisters. Hello, you're listening to Spooky Science Sisters, a podcast where we present to you a science-based, and probably very giggly, discussion on all things strange and unusual.
In this episode, we are joined by Karen Stolz now of the Monster Talk podcast to discuss a topic we are super excited about and that Paige has been asking for a long time, the Winchester Mansion.
So Karen has joined us for a couple of episodes now, and she's always so much fun to have on our show. So welcome back. We're super excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here, and I love this topic.
Yay!
Well, yeah, because we're very excited about it. And like Megan said, I've been talking about it for a long time, and now Megan is equally excited about it. So
I am very excited. Okay, so Karen, we are going to do something spooky, which I forgot to remind you about, but now you know. But first, do you want to just remind our listeners some of what you've been working on, where they can find you, all that stuff?
Yeah. So I, as you mentioned, I am one of the hosts of the Monster Talk podcast along with Blake Smith. So you can find the podcast at monstertalk.org. We've also got a YouTube channel now so that you can, we've done a couple of series on there, a set of live shows and another show called The Based on a True Story, which is about looking at movies like The Exorcist and horror movies and films about ghosts and stuff like that, and trying to look at the folklore and to see if there's any truth to the supposed true stories behind the movies.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it is.
So the Winchester movie would have counted for that.
And I think we're going to have to tackle that one because absolutely it falls into that category.
Yeah, well, it's very terrible, so...
Yeah, not much truth to it.
No, well, I'm sure I'll bring it up several times while we're talking about this. Okay, Paige, did anything spooky happen to you in the last week?
I don't think so, other than this isn't really spooky at all. It's just one of those stupid stories I'm going to tell. Last night, we were getting set up for dinner and we were eating out on the couch in our basement. And my dog likes to chew on her toy, like half under the coffee table, like half with her butt sticking out. And I had to go get something. So I was stepping over her, which I do, you know, every day. And at the exact same time that I was going to step over her, Elliot decided was the appropriate time to like move the coffee table for some unknown reason. So he moved the coffee table, Ari stood up, I was stepping over her, and both of my feet got stuck on like the other side of her. And I just like straight up like, I mean, totally busted my ass. Basement floor. I went like knee and elbow directly into the floor and then fell onto my hip. And like, here's what's spooky about it. I'm not 16 anymore. And I really hurt today.
Oh. Sorry.
So basically your something spooky is
I'm old.
Realizing that you're getting old.
Yeah,
I've been basically spooky for a while then.
Contemplating your own mortality.
Right. So that's mine. What do you got, Megan? Great.
Okay, I have two things. So one is sort of a kids say the darndest things sort of thing, because this is a couple of weeks ago. And I honestly can't even remember what we were talking about, but I think my daughter was talking about making some sort of art or something, or like working on something at school. And she said that she was making it for her other parents. And she's only like 2 and a half. So she's like, oh, I'm making this for my other parents. And we're like, who are your other parents? And she says, oh, it's the eagle and the black one. And we're like, what are you talking about? And we're like, well, where do your other parents live? And she said, they live in my room.
That's creepy.
I know. So we like, we cannot figure out what it was. Like, I don't know if like, I don't know. We can't figure it out. It must have been some story or something she heard at daycare and then latched onto it. Like, I don't know if the black one, like, is supposed to be like a crow or something because it's bird themed. I don't know.
Has she talked about it again since then?
She has not, but you know, I'm not bringing it up again.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it was a weird thing for her to say. I'm like, oh, okay. That's great. But my other thing is that a friend shared a news story from 100 years ago, or I guess it was like remembering something that happened 100 years ago. But today is February 22nd, 2022. Mm-hmm. And we had a small ice storm come through last night. And apparently on February 22nd, 1922, there was a huge ice storm in this part of Wisconsin. So sort of a weird coincidence that they happened exactly 100 years apart.
Well, it's also like especially weird because we get a lot of snow in this area, but there's not normally these types of ice storms.
So Karen, do you have anything spooky to share that has happened to you recently?
I really had to think on my feet for this one, being unprepared. So I think the spookiest thing that's happened to me in the past week or so, one night I woke up, it's maybe about 2 a.m., and I heard a weird scratching noise in the bedroom. And I thought, did I just dream that or did that really happen? And so I just stayed as quiet as I could. And then I heard it again about 5 minutes later. Uh-huh. And then it started getting louder and more insistent. And then I started hearing something that sounded like it was running across the roof, but it sounded very heavy. I mean, we have had raccoons around here before. And yeah. I thought, oh, it's those bastards again. But it sounded louder. I mean, it almost sounded like, you know, like a human. And then I thought I was hearing multiple things or people or something and just thinking, am I just tripping? Am I still dreaming? So I woke my husband up, Matt. He's talked with us before on the show. Hasn't he? I think.
Yeah.
He's been
here.
and anyway, so this is the scary part. Anyway, I got him to go outside to see what was going on and he was just wearing his underpants. So that's...
Great.
Previous part of the story. So he goes outside and it is a couple of two or three cats, feral cats. And we have a cat, a kind of part Siamese cat. Her name's Fanny. And she's attracting these feral cats outside. And
oh, no.
She was running upstairs and downstairs and looking out the window. And that's why they were kind of running across the roof. It sounded like something much bigger and heavier, especially when you wake up and it's early in the morning and you're half asleep.
Right. So,
pretty spooky at the time. And, you know, Matt goes outside and sees these, you know, cat's eyes staring at him. And so it certainly gave us all a shock, but we were glad that it wasn't the raccoons anyway.
Yeah, it was just cats.
Just cats. Yeah.
Well, like Paige said, like somebody said, I don't know, Paige, me, someone, we're going to talk about the Winchester Mansion. And I think more so we're going to focus on the owner, Sarah, mm-hmm. but we're going to tackle this more or less in three parts. So first, talk about Sarah Winchester's background and the building of the Winchester Mystery House. And then we'll talk about sort of the legend, the folklore, the haunting stuff, and then jump into some misconceptions and debunking. But I did want to put a little warning in here that we'll at least briefly be talking about pregnancy loss and child loss. So if you are particularly sensitive to those issues, this might be one that you want to skip, or at least skip sort of the next part.
But we will go ahead and dive right into the background of the mansion itself. And you'll hear us sort of bounce it back and forth between calling it the Winchester Mansion and calling it the Winchester Mystery House. I believe that the name the Winchester Mystery House has kind of become just like what it's been marketed as, because now it's like a tourist attraction. So the mansion itself is a really beautiful 160 room, 24,000 square foot Victorian mansion located about an hour south of San Francisco in San Jose, California. Nowadays, it is a huge tourist attraction and is considered one of the most haunted homes in the US, which like never heard that before.
Aren't they all?
Yeah. Every place is. But I think what's interesting with this place is that it wasn't originally known for being haunted by ghosts. It was more, the story more is that Sarah Winchester herself was haunted.
Yes.
Rather than the house. But there are still lots of claims of people going there and experiencing all different kinds of phenomena.
Yes. And it hasn't stopped like various ghost hunting shows and stuff from going there. So
of course not.
For decades, I think it was back in the 70s or 80s that Sylvia Brown did a seance there. And so it's really attracted. I mean, in recent years, ghost hunters and ghost adventures, but certainly in the past, some of the big name psychics and mediums were going there as well.
Now, if you've never seen the house, like I said, I think it's really pretty. And we will post a couple photos of it. So that way, if you haven't seen it, you can. But I just like when I look at this, what I really want to happen with this house is I want them to turn it into a really awesome haunted bed and breakfast.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be cool to be able to stay there. Although put in the notes that you'd probably need a lot of liability insurance for like doorways to nowhere and stairways to nowhere.
Exactly.
You should explain to the insurance company, like, I lost one of my guests. Yeah. And so, Karen, you said that you have been there three times. So
yes.
What's it like in person? Because I've never been.
Well, I think I was just a kid, maybe about 8 or 9, and I saw an episode of, I think it was Ripley's Believe It or Not, and they featured the house. And I just remember thinking, I'm going to go and see that place when I get older. That is just so cool, seeing the stairway to nowhere and the door to nowhere. And when I moved out to the Bay Area, heard about the place and remembered that I'd always wanted to see it. And so I've been there three times and over the course of almost two decades now. So the one thing I will say is that it's really gone up in price to go through the place.
Oh, really?
Look at it. Yeah. But it's an incredible place. Beautiful gardens. It used to have about 500 rooms, but now there's, as you said, about 160 rooms. And they take you through maybe about two thirds of the house. So you do get to see a large section of it, and you can go and have a look at the grounds as well, because they used to have an orchard there. Most people go there for the tour of the house, but you can also do a historical tour. So I've done both.
And you actually can stay there, can't you, for like a night?
I know that they've had like ghost hunting tours at night and flashlight
tours. Maybe that's
tours,
what I'm thinking
like
of.
Yeah, I don't think you can stay there. I know that I think Ghost Adventures, they stayed there overnight, and a few people have been able to do that. But usually it's if you've got a TV crew with you.
Got it.
Gotcha. One thing I was going to ask is, Karen, so you haven't been there in the context of like doing any sort of paranormal ghost hunting stuff then?
I wish that I could have, but they just don't allow that sort of thing, again, unless you're part of some TV show. They won't let you through. I've heard that if you do want to do any kind of investigation there, that it costs thousands of dollars.
Holy cow.
A few other places like Myrtle's Plantation in Louisiana, they do the same thing as well. So I think it's just kind of people connected to that sort of thing. But to just go through, they don't allow photography. There's just no way that you could do any kind of proper investigation.
Okay. So no, you didn't see any ghosts then.
I didn't, but there are lots of stories about people. They've got lots of old portraits on the walls, and people will say that they've seen people from the portraits on the grounds, like, maids and carpenters and grounds people, that they've seen them around. And other people claim that they've heard their voice called out, or they have felt someone tapping them on the shoulder, or that they've even seen Sarah herself. All the usual stuff. Footsteps.
The usual stuff.
Yeah. But you can imagine in a place like that, I mean, footsteps everywhere all the time.
Right. Yeah. It's sort of like I imagine it's like a little twisty turny inside. So I could imagine it would be sort of disorienting, and you might feel like you're hearing something or whatever that you're not actually hearing. So
absolutely. And they take people through in these big groups, maybe about 15, 20 at a time. And you've got another group that's hot on the heels of you that's coming through. It's just when they do the tours as well, it's usually teenagers who are guiding them, and they're very robotic, and they just tell you this scripted story. And it's telling all of the folklore. It's not telling the truth.
Gotcha. Well, someday, Paige, we'll go.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely going.
You have to.
Stephen was very interested. He was like, can you go here for real? And I was like, yeah, you can go tour the house. It's a real place.
Yeah, it's been open to the public for almost 100 years now.
Yeah, they've been profiting off of poor Sarah for a long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Paige, you're going to keep us going with some background about Sarah and how the house was built.
Yeah. So when the house was first built, it was really built, it was constructed as a much smaller 8-bedroom farmhouse. And it really wasn't until 1884, when Sarah bought it, that the farmhouse vision changed. All right. So who is Sarah Winchester, and why the big house? So Sarah was born Sarah Lockwood Pardee, and was born in New Haven, Connecticut in 1839. Very smart woman. And as a kid, she apparently learned like 4 languages and was really good in math and science, and apparently did wonderfully in musical composition. Many considered her a child prodigy. So in 1862, Sarah marries William Winchester, and this is the Winchester family of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company. So if you know of the Winchester rifles, this is that family. Unfortunately, in 1881, William passes away after a battle with tuberculosis, and this is all shortly after losing William and Sarah's first and only child. So after his passing, Sarah inherits what I read was about $20 million and moves to California to be near her family. And this is really when the legend of the Winchester Mystery House and everything else we're going to talk about, that's when this all gets started.
And I read $20 million in several places as well. And that is equal to about $500 million today. So she had a lot of money. She also inherited a 50% stake in the Winchester Arms Company that gave her a continuous income of about $1,000 a day, which is about $26,000 in today's money per day. So yeah, she could be Scrooge McDucking it into piles of money if she wanted to do that. And yeah, you'll sense a theme as we go through this. Because I'm just going to already start emphasizing that this is a woman who is grieving and has just inherited a very large sum of money that she is in total control of at the time. So, and at a time when that's not necessarily the norm. And I think it was listening to the Criminal podcast episode about the Winchester house and Sarah Winchester, and them talking about her losing her husband and their child, like, just absolutely broke my heart. And the fact that she had had several miscarriages before, she was able to carry her daughter Annie to term, and then Annie ended up having like some condition where she basically just wasted away, it's just the worst. Like, I just feel so terrible for her.
Could I add to that she lost her mother around the same time too, and also her father-in-law. So
were
all of these deaths in quick succession.
Yeah, and I pretty much think that she was like, she just sort of decided like, well, I'm in mourning now, and that's the way it's going to be. So,
which, like, yeah, me too.
Yeah, you know, right. I was like, oh, I don't think many of us would react very differently to that situation.
So after, like I said, all of this tragedy she goes through, she ends up making the move to California, and that's when she purchases the farmhouse and the land it sits on. Now, during her time in the house, she ends up putting millions of dollars into construction. And the final product is the 24,000 square foot home I mentioned at the beginning, 160 rooms. I read 10,000 windows, 2,000 doors, and 47 stairways and fireplaces. Like, this is a big place.
Three elevators as well.
And people during that time start to claim that, like, the construction never stops. And they say it's like 24/7. Never-ending construction.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where, like, the whole mythology behind the house starts, because her neighbors start to get, you know, they start to gossip and stuff because she wasn't exactly great at, like, being social with people. Yeah. But yeah, it's a myth that construction was nonstop 24/7. It's just her neighbors or newspapers, you know, making up stories or sensationalizing things. And I just wanted to mention, as we said earlier, she was very smart. She purportedly had an interest in architecture and was, like, helping to draft a lot of the plans. She loved technology, so things like the elevators, which were, like, pretty new at the time, and a few other features, like, people sort of found strange that she was including all this, like, newfangled stuff in her house. But her and William, her husband, had worked on designing and building other projects when he was alive. So I had heard it speculated that it was possible that this was, like, a way for her to continue to feel connected to him. She came from a family of woodworkers. So it's like she might have just, like, liked the project, and it was a way to keep busy, you know, after she experienced all this loss.
Absolutely. And I should add too that when you're there, they tell you that the construction was nonstop 24/7, as you said. And they tell you that the moment that she died, they stopped, the carpenters stopped hammering nails into the building, and that you can still see some of the nails half stuck out where they stopped their work.
Oh my gosh.
Goodness. The drama.
Oh, yeah. They lay it on thick.
It was sort of my impression that, like, yeah, reading articles about this, you had to sort of, like, read around the tourist attraction stuff that the people are telling people at the mansion, and yeah, versus, like, what actually happened, which is a bummer. But
so all of that stuff combined with there being windows looking into rooms, which I don't know why that's something that is, like, mentioned every time I look at an article or, like, read about this house. It's not that bizarre to have a window looking into a room. It's really not.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. And then, like, I don't know how accurate some of the sets were in the movie. Like, I know they filmed some of the exterior shots of, like, the Winchester movie at the house itself and then built sets for the interior. But, like, to me, it looked like there were just, like there were windows in the ceilings, but it's like they were, like, skylights. So, like, my guess is these were, like, interior rooms that couldn't have windows to the outside, so they, like, put ones to a level above that had natural light coming in or something like that. So
yeah,
that's my guess. I don't know, people were, I noticed that too, that people were really crazy about that, and it's like, well, they're probably just trying to get light in there.
right
A lot of these strange features, and when you go through there, aside from the stairway to nowhere and the door to nowhere, there are lots of strange features. There's plumbing on the outside, as you said, there are windows just on the floors, and you've got tiny miniature doors, and you've got other doors that just open out to nothing inside.
Yeah.
So you have all of these strange features, and so the spoiler at this point is that a lot of these features were added after she died.
Oh.
So there was I'm trying to think of his name. There was a carpenter, it was James Perkins or something, and he had worked for her for decades. And when the Brown family bought the place and turned it into a tourist attraction, he said they've added some of these strange features. So other strange features I'm sure we'll get to shortly are a result of some natural activity that took place there. But a lot of strange things that are in there that make her seem crazy were just added by the family to kind of add authenticity to the story and the folklore.
Well, great. Here's my thing is like knowing that and knowing there were probably some unusual things about the house even before that. It's like she was, like you said, interested in architecture. Like who's to say that she wasn't just like, you know, let's make this an experiment. Like let's just like a fun experiment. Like let's put some weird stuff in here and see what happens. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But if it does, cool. Like, I don't know. It's just, I just don't think it's weird. I don't know. None of this stuff really bothers me, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess I didn't even actually read anywhere that some of the stuff had been added after the fact. So I'm glad you added that, Karen, because I had just read that like some of the stuff, like windows to, you know, windows on the, not windows, like stairways to nowhere and doors to nowhere and stuff like that, were because they had just decided to like close off portions of the house, mm-hmm. like rather than rebuild them after the 1906 earthquake.
Right. Yeah. And that is true for a lot of those features. She was still living there at that point, mm-hmm. at 1906, and was living in the house when the earthquake took place. Yeah. And apparently she said afterwards that the house looked like it had been built by a crazy person because it was just so it had been destroyed by the earthquake. Yeah. And so they actually blocked off whole sections of the house. And the door to nowhere used to have a balcony. So that's what explains that 8-foot drop.
Yeah.
And the stairway to nowhere used to go to a room. And then I think they had seven stories, and about three of those just collapsed during the earthquake. Yeah. So they just blocked off about 30 rooms, and she moved from that point as well. And she had about 12 properties around the Bay Area. So she didn't live there any longer. I think she visited weekly or every couple of weeks, but she had caretakers on the premises at that point, and she didn't really do much building from then on. You hear people say she was working on the house for 38 years. That's just not true. She stopped after the earthquake.
Right. Yeah. And like didn't even live there for the last 15 years of her life. So it's like, okay. Yeah. And then I guess there's some other weird things about the house. Like there's something about the number 13, like some sort of motif repeating in various designs. And she's got like some sort of odd Shakespeare, slightly spooky Shakespeare quotes on a couple of windows and stuff. But I don't know. I think she's probably just a little eccentric, and like that's not a bad thing.
And an artist, like, right? I just
the 13 motif was added by the new owners as well.
Oh really?
I think that the palm trees, and it's spoilers all over the place, but I think she could have had 13 palm trees, but then they added some really ridiculous features. I'm sure we're going to start talking about the supposed seance room, that there are 13 hooks on the wall for the 13 robes that she would wear during her seances. And there's this big sink that has 13 holes in it. And you can see that they've been drilled by a modern drill. I mean, there's no way that she did that. Again, as you were saying, she was interested in architecture and design. So, you know, a lot of these kind of shabby things that they've done, for example, there's a chandelier and they say that it arrived, it was an antique, or it came from Germany and it arrived with only 12 of the jets on it, the kind of gas jets. And so she hastily added a 13th one. And when you see it, it's just so tacky. There's absolutely no way. I mean, this woman was a woman of style and taste. She wouldn't have done that herself. And so a lot of these things that are coming in 13s are just things that they've added afterwards. I mean, they even say that on her will, she signed it 13 times, and that's not true either.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make it sound superstitious.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, pretty much the story with, or I guess the way to wrap up this sort of section on who Sarah was and how the house was built and everything is, okay, she's been through something really tragic. She basically I mean, I think she more or less did commit to living in mourning for like the rest of her life. And she's often like, I think the only picture of her that exists is one where she's wearing sort of a black dress like they would. But like she more or less just decides like to keep to herself and to do whatever she wants with her money. And that like absolutely blows people's minds. So they say that she's unhinged and that she's like some crazy person. Mm-hmm. And one article that I read by a woman named Meg Conley just had this great way of putting it. So I wanted to read the quote from that article. So she says, "If there's one thing we love more than a haunted house, it's a haunted woman. Houses are haunted because of things that happened in them. Women are haunted because of things they've done or things they've let happen. A haunted woman gets what she deserves in the next life, in this one. And my goodness, we love to watch a woman getting what she deserves." And I'm going to put a link to that article like right in the show notes because it is so beautifully written and like perfectly encapsulates how I ended up feeling about Sarah Winchester and just like her life and her story. To add to that, I will just say that like even if she was a bit odd, like even if this house project was a bit weird, it's not like the super rich aren't out there doing weird shit today. Like Jeffrey Bezos is blasting himself off into space in a penis-shaped rocket. Elon Musk is like, I don't know, planning on escaping to Mars or building some sort of like insane underground tubing transportation system that like sounds like it would suck your insides out if it failed. And like Sarah was smart and interested in architecture. And like all the stories about her are like she was just some crazy grief-stricken woman. And I think her grief probably played a role in like the later years of her life. But I guarantee that if she were a man, people would like, they would just say like, oh, she's an eccentric genius. Like mm-hmm. they would not be so shitty to her.
And like, in the notes, I just put yes.
I'm Eliza, and I need you to listen to me. Have you ever felt so much that you don't know where to put it all? And you wonder if anyone would notice if you screamed? Because you want to. Scream for the ones they've hurt, the ones they've taken. Scream for yourself. These are my words, my story from my perspective, because I know you'll hear other versions, because I want you to have a chance to believe mine, or at least hear it. If you're getting this, it's already over. But if one of you listens, really listens, it won't be for nothing.
Okay, so next we are going to talk about, which we've started talking about a little bit, but the sort of the legend of this being a haunted house and how this comes to be known as one of the most haunted houses in the US.
This is all happening at a time, and Karen, I'm hoping maybe you can speak a little bit more to this, but mm-hmm. a time where spiritual mediums are really starting to gain popularity.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah, she started building this house around the time that spiritualism really became very popular. And so, I mean, I don't know how much you want to get into this at this point, because there's a lot of kind of crossing over with the theories here, but mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The main story is that she had visited a psychic medium in Boston, and mm-hmm. his name apparently was Adam Coons, as the story goes. And this psychic said that she was cursed because she belonged to the family, the Winchester family, who had created this rifle, and it had killed so many people and so many animals, and that they were – I mean, there's two stories here. One is that she was told to go west and to build a house either to house all of the spirits of those who died at the hands of the rifle, or that she was to build this house to get away from the spirits. And she needed to spend her entire life just adding to this house. And as long as she did that, she wouldn't die. But if she stopped building, then she would die. And that's mm-hmm. why there's this belief that she was building 24/7.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I put a little bit of the history in here with that particular, because it was the Winchester Model 30 or 73, which is the gun that people are now kind of associate with this story, because mm-hmm. it became very popular at that time, and it was pretty unique in that it was one of the first reliable lever action rifles. And so it was pretty much like the first repeating gun or repeater gun that got popular. It was one of the first ones that you could have, you know, several shots in a magazine. And because of that, and because it became so popular, it ended up becoming, or it became marketed as this, like, the gun that won the West. And it was produced with several variations of barrel lengths and cartridge sizes. And you could put similar caliber cartridge, or there was a similar caliber cartridges used in handguns, so people could carry only one type of ammunition. So anyways, it becomes very, very popular. And mm-hmm. there are like 720,000 model 1873s that are sold by 1923. And, you know, because of this, I guess she's supposed to have some, the idea is that people think she has some sort of like guilt, or right. is being like Karen said, haunted essentially by the spirits of the people who are killed by this rifle.
Yeah. And if I could add here too, the Winchesters didn't actually invent the firearm at all. They invested in these firearms.
Right.
But that actually made their money in the shirt making business. So it was a pretty innocuous thing. And they didn't only make rifles and shirts, but they also made silverware and flashlights and garden tools and even irons and roller skates. And they had, as I've mentioned already, orchards there, and they used to grow apricots and almonds and walnuts. And so they would package fruit and other things too. So it wasn't just rifles that were their business.
Right. But she, yeah, you know, you can't be haunted by the spirits of the
roller skates.
Apricots.
Yes. not as scary.
Yeah. So this sort of supernatural aspect to this starts pretty early. So the house she starts building in, what year, Paige? 1884.
1880. I think that sounds right. Yeah, 1884.
Yeah, 1884. And in 1895, you have an article appear in the San Francisco Chronicle that has some of the aspects that are sort of the foundation of the legend that you hear today. So this never-ending construction, if she stops, she'll die. And I think there's a lot of stuff bouncing around in various papers at that point that portray her building this home as like a symbol of wastefulness and excess, which is, you know, sort of in line with what was going on in the country at the time. And I think, Karen, you noted that the San Jose Herald ran a story about her as well.
Yeah, I think this is where it gets really interesting. So we were already talking about spiritualism, but there were a lot of people in the Bay Area who were into that movement at the time. Mm-hmm. The founder of Stanford University, Leland Stanford, he was into spiritualism as well. And so anyway, I mean, yeah, this is the tricky part of it. The owners of the newspapers at the time, the main newspapers, there was the San Jose Mercury and the San Jose Herald. They were the Hayes family. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but they owned these newspapers and they were running these stories about Sarah Winchester. But the mm-hmm. ironic thing is their mother was actually a faith healer, and she was into spiritualism, and she'd founded this church called the True Life Church. And so she was really into all of these things that they were claiming Sarah Winchester was into. And there's no evidence that she was a spiritualist at all. In fact, she was an Episcopalian, a practicing Episcopalian instead. And so a number of people came out after her death. One person was her private secretary and companion. Her name was Henrietta Severia, I think. And she said, yeah, there's no way that she was into these kinds of things. They just made this stuff up and really based it on their mother. So the mother was Mary Folsom Hayes Chenoweth. Mm. And so, yeah, she was into all of these things. And where it gets extra interesting is that these kinds of houses, or the Winchester Mystery House, as it's known today, was actually a trend of the time. So there were other houses at the time that looked like that. So if you go and look up the Hayes Mansion, it looks different today. I think it burnt down at the turn of the century, and so they rebuilt it, and it looked a lot more modern. But at the time, it was a Queen Anne-style building, and it had something like 60 rooms. And if you look at pictures of the house, you could be mistaken for thinking that it's the Winchester Mystery House. It looks pretty much the same. And it had its own library and school. So it was a very large place. And, it was just a trend where people would try to outdo each other with these oversized, unique-looking houses. So Sarah was really just following that trend because she was a woman of wealth and means, and it wasn't like she was doing this because she was crazy. She was really just a wealthy person exerting her fortune.
Yeah, which, is her right.
Absolutely.
I looked up the Hayes Mansion, and it's like, you could probably put them side by side.
Yeah.
And ask people, like, which one is which? They, I don't think, would know.
It looks really similar. It's got the same style, that castle style with the turret.
Yeah, looking at even just the picture of the Winchester house is like, it's a pretty stylish looking house. And it very much matches the type of architecture that was being built at the time.
Absolutely. And there were other houses that were like that too. So again, they really, make that out to be part of her being eccentric, but it was just kind of common thing at the time for wealthy women to do. Wealthy people. Yeah.
So that's the legend, right? She sees a medium, she has to keep building the house, or she has to build the house for the spirits. And that's basically the gist of the Winchester movie, is they basically take everything about the house that is weird and everything about the sort of like haunting legend and the fact that she's like haunted by the spirits of the people who were killed by the Winchester rifle. And they're like, oh, she's not crazy, but it's because all of that stuff is real. Mm-hmm. That's the gist of the movie. Okay. Yes. And I'm like pretty sure the implication by the end of it was like that an angry ghost caused the 1906 San Francisco earthquake. So I call shenanigans on that.
there is a claim too that I think they tell at the house that the spirits were very angry around that time of the earthquake, that she was nearing completion on the home, and so that they sent that earthquake.
No, so that's actually something they say on the tour. Oh, Jesus Christ!
I think I heard it on one of the times I went. They keep adding to the story over the years.
No. Okay. Great. Well, we've already touched on some of this stuff, but now we can move into phase three. Just like, let's talk about how much of this stuff is bullshit. we'll just sort of go through this point by point. So first and foremost, like Karen mentioned, there's no record of her ever meeting with a medium. So we can sort of just like scratch that off. And, you said, according to her former maid, she's like, no, this would not have been a thing that she was into. So.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the medium story can be traced back to a book that was written about the house and Sarah in the 1960s.
Gotcha. Okay. So there is also people talk about, and I think at the time, when they were sort of using her building the house as like this, it's a symbol of like her excess and her wealth and all this stuff, and making it sound like it was a bad thing. So people would say like, oh, she spent all of her money on this house. And in reality, she spent about $5 million, which is a lot. I saw figures like up to about $70 million in today's money. So it was very expensive to build, but it was not the majority of her $20 million fortune or her stake in the Winchester Arms Company. And importantly, most of her fortune during her life and then also after she died went towards philanthropy. And it sounded like she helped to take care of her sisters financially and their children and paid for either their children's education and stuff. So she was a very caring person for her family and was like, she was doing a lot to try to take care of other people.
And as we've already touched on a couple times, the construction on the house was not endless. There are records of it stopping and starting throughout the time she owned it. And some of the correspondence indicates that she was basically just trying to keep the people working on the home employed. So in 1893 really marked the beginning of a time of economic hardship for the U.S. where unemployment hit 40% in some states. And so Sarah had a lot of empathy for people, as Megan already talked about. I mean, she just wanted to help people out. And so a lot of modern historians think that, like I said, she was just trying to keep people employed. And she was said to be very kind to her staff and that she would give, or that she gave a portion of her estate when she passed away to them.
She did established a hospital. I think it's part of the Yale New Haven Hospital today. And she'd established this for to research tuberculosis because her husband and her father-in-law had both died of tuberculosis. So yeah, she was a real benefactor and just, as you were saying, as you were both saying, gave a lot of money away to various charities. And apparently she was just a really generous employer as well. There's a lot of folklore saying that she was a very cruel employer and that she, if anyone would ever talk about her, she would dismiss them on the spot, and that she has all of these spy holes throughout the house to be able to spy on her workers. And it doesn't seem like any of that is true, that I mean, until quite recently, there were people around who knew her and they said that she was just very kind, very generous. Yeah. She just kept to herself because I don't know when you want to get into this, but she had a couple of conditions that made her really turn to her into a recluse. She had problems with rheumatoid arthritis and she'd lost a lot of her teeth. So she always wore a veil. So she didn't like to socialize with other people. She's just really kept to herself. And yeah. That's why she didn't like people to take photographs of her.
Yeah. We could talk a little bit about that, I guess, with this next point, which is, so there are some things that we already talked about that people find odd about the house, but aren't that weird when you consider them in context. And some of those things, it sounds like, were just like added by the carnies who bought it after she died. So like, well, okay, that's not weird. That's just them, you know, turning it into a tourist attraction. But the very tight staircases, for example, with like switchbacks after just a few steps, were built specifically to accommodate her because she was only 4'10". So she was a very tiny woman. And like Karen mentioned, had severe arthritis. So it's just like she's building the house for herself and like to have custom features for herself, like you would if you had $500 million to, you know, build yourself a house that you wanted to live in.
But there is one theory that those switchback stairs, that they were created to slow down the spirits so that they could chase her.
Oh, I've heard this.
Ridiculous.
Which, like, what spirits are taking the stairs? That's my question. Yeah. You know?
I don't know. All the ones in Phasmophobia seem to, like, actually take the stairs. So.
Good point. Phasmophobia is the most accurate.
Yes, it's so accurate. that all these weird features are like to slow down the ghosts or like make it tricky for them to get around. It's like, okay, whatever. And we already talked a little bit about other quirky features, like, you know, stairways to nowhere, doorways to nowhere might have been. They closed off portions of the house after the San Francisco earthquake. Or like Karen said, I guess there's some stuff that was just added after the fact to like make her look crazier.
Yep.
Which is shitty.
It is. You know, I saw an interview with a woman who was a girl at the time when Sarah Winchester was still alive, and she was a neighbor, and she was asked, well, what do you think Sarah Winchester would think about all of these stories? And she said, well, she just would have been overjoyed at people being interested in her, and if they were amused by this, or they saw something in this that would have given her some happiness. And yeah. I can see that to a point, but to me, having an interest in history, I think it's pretty annoying to think that there was this woman, she was so intelligent and she did so much. And it's just really sad that her history has just been destroyed in favor of this ridiculous folklore and urban legends.
Yeah, I'd be pretty pissed if I'd done all this good for my community and like spent my money in ways to like help my family and everything. I think like everything just sort of like focuses on the oddities of the house and like mm-hmm. doesn't actually like focus on how great she was as a person.
Exactly.
It just basically ignores that. So another great point that I saw was that the Winchester Repeating Arms Company, the time that, you know, they made the model 73 or 83 or whatever it was that got so popular was in the late 1880s. Like, this wasn't a gun fortune that was made in the 21st century. Like, she likely had no qualms about how that money was made. So the whole thing about her feeling this like extreme guilt about where her money came from, and that, you know, she was trying to make up for the fact that the Winchester rifle had killed so many people, I think is just like total bullshit. And it's like more just projecting like 21st century ideas about guns and like the problems that we have with them now onto, you know, people who would not have thought about them that way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good point.
Yeah. And none of the articles about Sarah and the house written during her lifetime mention ghosts beyond like potentially some medium stuff that got thrown in there by the Hayes. They mostly just focus on the house's perceived oddness and her having too much money on her hands. But even like Karen said, the house might have not even been that weird. Like, other people were building enormous sprawling houses as well.
Yep.
And when she dies, the house is purchased by John H. Brown, who is a man who worked in theme parks designing roller coasters. And apparently he was basically trying to rebuild his reputation after one of his rides killed a woman in Canada. So wow. Him and his wife decide to buy the Winchester Mansion and turn it into a tourist attraction.
Which, like, great. Man's reputation is on the rocks, so he fixes it by helping drive a dead woman's reputation into the ground.
Yeah, gee. I didn't know that. It was owned by a few other people after Sarah Winchester died, but I guess they just couldn't do anything with it. And so he knew how to turn it around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very annoyed.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So then it's 2 years after Sarah's death that newspapers start to write stories about the mansion being haunted. And that's when the stories about her doing seances start to appear. The only sort of note that I had about this was that what they call the seance room today on the tour, and that they say that Sarah used to go in there by herself and, like, I don't know, apparently wear different robes and do these seances and like get orders on like how to build different rooms on the house in the house right. from the spirits was like just the gardener's room.
Yeah, I think it was lived in by a couple of people who had all worked on the premises, but it wasn't a seance room. But there are all of these claims that she performed seances there every night at midnight, and that she even performed a seance with Harry Houdini, who visited at some point. And Houdini did visit, but it was about 2 years after her death. So the place was already opened up as a tourist attraction when he went there.
Gotcha. And did he visit because he was interested in sort of like the occult and supernatural stuff. So, but he was more interested in it from like debunking it, right?
He was, yeah. He was a magician and he knew how to do a lot of these things that the spiritualists were doing, but just through trickery. And so, it's a long story, but he loved his mother so much when she died. I think that they had some kind of plan that if she could possibly come back, then he would try to communicate with her. And so he really went after a lot of hucksters and spiritualists and people who were doing seances with all the ectoplasm and that kind of thing, and trying to expose them and debunk it. So I think in general, yeah, we had an interest in that kind of thing, and hearing the stories that the Brown family were telling about Sarah Winchester, he wanted to go and check it out for himself, but he certainly didn't attend a seance with Sarah Winchester.
Gotcha. Yeah. Do you know anything about, I guess, Houdini's impression of the house? Because I feel like I only saw one mention of it, and it made it sound like that particular story made it sound like Houdini was like, yeah, it's definitely haunted. But I was like, oh, I doubt that.
Yeah, he wasn't a believer in things like that, because yeah. He'd really just gone after people that made all kinds of unscientific claims. So he was a very early skeptic. So I've never read anything about what he thought about the place, but I'm sure, I mean, even though we debunk these kinds of things, we're still interested in them. So I think he was probably taking a similar stance. He just wanted to go and see the place as an oddity rather than believing that there was anything haunted about the place or woman.
It's like I said, we'd go.
Oh, yeah. I'm like waiting for the day that we get to go. So since then, there have been several movies, books, and I even found a musical made about Sarah Winchester's story. Many of which, you know, tell the story of the legend, but many tell the story of Sarah Winchester and the intelligent, good-hearted woman that she was.
So, Karen, do you have any final thoughts before I sort of do my little wrap-up on Sarah Winchester that you want to talk about?
Well, I've been really interested in this story for so long, and when I first went to the house, I believed in all of the stories, or it didn't necessarily believe that that's how things happened, but that she was a haunted woman and that she believed she was cursed and that she'd, basically what they tell you there, that that's what you're inclined to believe. And so I remember writing an article about this almost 2 decades ago now and telling that kind of party line. And then over the years, doing more investigation and finding out that there's, that this is absolutely not the way that things went. And so I did write a chapter on this topic for my book, Haunting America. But there's another book that I really want to recommend to people, too. It's called Captive of the Labyrinth, Sarah Winchester, Heiress to the Rifle Fortune. And it's by a historian. She lives in the Bay Area. Her name's Mary Jo Ignoffo. And she really debunks all of the claims, and she gives the history and tells the truth about this amazing woman. And I think really does a greater service to her legend and her legacy than all of the stories that are told at the Winchester Mystery House. So if you're interested in the historical aspects of this woman and her house, you should definitely read this book.
Yeah. So a couple of things that I wanted to, I guess, leave you guys with before we do our wrap up. So first, I have to read a final quote from that Meg Conley article because I loved it so much. So she says, "I must face that the reason I love Sarah so much is because, well, I do think she was a haunted woman. I love a haunted woman too. She was not haunted by spirits, but haunted in the way so many of us are. A woman who has endured miscarriages, who has held her baby while she literally wasted away, and who has buried a husband is a woman haunted by sorrow. A woman who chooses to build what she likes, who does not court popular opinion, who establishes borders and decides who will cross them, is a woman haunted by rumor. A woman who creates anything that outlasts her is a woman haunted by later generations determined to profit off the flattening of her full life." So I love that article so much.
Really nicely said.
Yes. And so everyone should just go to the show notes and read that. I joked with Paige. I was like, can I just read this out loud for the episode? And just have that be the episode. Yes. And then second, I wanted to leave everyone with a final story that is told on tours of the Winchester House. So Karen, you can confirm if this is true or not. But it's said that they discovered a safe that was nested within two more safes in one of Sarah's favorite rooms of the house. And inside that final safe, they found William and Annie's obituaries and a lock of hair from each of them, which in the words of Chidi from The Good Place, this broke me. If it's true.
And I don't know if that's true or not. I've certainly heard that. I mean, the thing that I question is that their little girl died at, I think, about the age of 1 month. And I'm just wondering if she would have had, I mean, certainly there are kids who are born with hair. When my son was born, he was bald, and it took quite some time for hair to come through. So it is possible. Yeah, I just don't know. I haven't seen any photographs. I haven't seen any evidence of this. And it seems to me, too, that if she had a good relationship with her staff, I just don't think that they would have done her a disservice in that way to just go racing to this vault after she died. Yeah, I really can't comment as to whether that's true or not. Perhaps there's some truth to it.
Oh, well, it's just sad. It makes me so sad that she was and continues to be so misunderstood. And I guess my hope is just that, like, we could provide at least a little bit of justice for her reputation, or sort of add to the people who are finally trying to get the real story out there. After she died, her lawyer, Samuel Lieb, is quoted as saying that Sarah was as sane and clear-headed a woman as I've ever known. She had a better grasp of business and financial affairs than most men. So, yeah.
And yeah, a number of people did come out after her death. I think her dentist as well, and as I mentioned earlier, her secretary, a whole bunch of people came out and said she was incredibly intelligent, level-headed, and that none of the rumors were true.
Yeah.
I think it's just really important to spread the truth about this story.
Yeah, that's right. Because she was awesome, and she deserves to be remembered as a great woman, and just, you know, fuck the patriarchy.
Indeed.
That's my take home.
I came back in at the perfect time. All right. Well, that seems like a good stopping point then, unless there's anything, Karen, that you wanted to add.
Not really. No, I think we covered a lot of ground here. But I mean, there's so much more to the story. Definitely, if anyone's interested in this, go and check out the book that I mentioned. Don't just listen to the folklore that's repeated.
Yeah,
for sure.
Just go on the tour and verbally abuse the
tour guides argue with them
for telling lies.
But don't tell them we sent you.
Yeah, exactly.
We'd end up like Kenny, who's banned from Zach Bagans Museum. We'll get banned from the Winchester.
Yeah, I want to at least be inside of the house before we get banned from it.
We've been banned from a few places in our time too, so yeah. I don't want the truth to get out.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's coming for us eventually.
Yeah, that happens.
All right. Well, Karen, thank you so much again for joining us.
Oh, thank you for letting me be a part of this. It was good fun.
Oh, good.
Oh, heck yeah. We always have such a great time with you.
Oh, thank you. Love coming on the show.
Before I wrap us up, is there any, like, anything you want to plug before I get off, or anything new you're working on?
I'm working on a book about women's health at the moment, so it's kind of tangential to everything else.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of kind of folklore and urban legends connected to women's health. But yeah, if people want to go and check out Monster Talk, or go and check out Haunting America, I look at this story and lots of other stories just like this, other famous hauntings around the country, all most haunted places in America.
Yeah.
All righty then. Well, that wraps up our episode on the Winchester Mystery House. Tune in for episode 43 on spooky volcanoes. If you liked this, which is like, tune in for Megan's episode on spooky volcanoes.
I will.
If you liked this episode, hit subscribe and share with a friend. You can find us on TikTok at Spooky Science, Twitter and Instagram at Spooky SciPod, Facebook at Spooky Science Sisters, and at our website, SpookyScienceSisters.com. If you have any questions about previous topics or ideas for future episodes, email us at SpookyScienceSisters@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening and stay spooky.
Science! 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 Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes, yes! Woo! Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.